Like Viviana, I brought something with me. It's not as interesting as what she has, though. Constantly deeply touched by that kitten. I'm inspired by her. I think she's a wonderful just a wonderful example of life. As I was today, I took this text that is one of the common Zen texts that we hear regularly. And I may have talked about it before with you. It also has to do with the kitten. I'm not sure if she inspired me to pick this text, or if I picked this text and then I looked at her, or I don't know. It doesn't matter. I might first say that when we hear this word spirituality, which is a word that is often used these days, there's some confusion because people think of it as meaning to be spiritual is to be harmonious, to be peaceful. And in fact, that's not it at all. The origin of the word simply means what has to do with our spirit, with our mind. It doesn't say certain aspects of our mind. It doesn't say a peaceful mind. And in fact, spirituality means to enter into relation with everything. Do not exclude. And everything being alive, moving, happening. It's not in just inanimate things. And we have this capacity. We have this, our mind has this capacity to enter in relationship with everything and everyone. And when I observe the kitten, she has a part of her body that it's almost as if it doesn't exist for her. She does it when she does her toilet, what do we say in Portuguese? Toilet, when she cleans herself. You know, she never touches her legs or her tail. It's as if it doesn't exist. She doesn't feel it. Or this is what we think, that's what it appears to be. She doesn't seem to have any problem with that. She just doesn't, it's not there. We do this with ourselves. with aspects of ourselves. We don't deal with them. We don't take care of them. Her mind functions that way. She has these parts of her body that she has no sensation for a very physiological reason, and she doesn't pay any attention to them. Our minds are different. We choose not to feel these parts of ourselves. And therefore, they don't exist, and we don't take care of them. And we are handicapped because of that. We are more handicapped than she is, probably. There's a lot of speculation of what she's experiencing. This is, of course, is my observation, what I'm observing and experiencing in what I experience of her. So this text goes directly to this, these issues. It comes from one of the more famous figures in Zen. In fact, the man who brought Zen practices from China in the 13th century. So he was the first Japanese practitioner. So the text is, to study the Buddha way, or just the way, we will go through it line by line after. Okay. To study the Buddha way is to study oneself. To study oneself is to forget oneself. To forget oneself is to be enlightened by the myriad dharmas. Dharmas being things, let's say. Okay. Myriad, many, the everything. So, to study the way being, as this says, to study the way is to study oneself. You are the way. That is in the intrinsic, absolute sense. You are the way. You are it, as we said yesterday. From the relative experiential point of view, there is you and there is the way. The way being this practice, the search, the desire to find something, to discover something, to learn something, to be spiritual. The Buddha way, Buddha is a word that has taken on meaning, but it just means awakened. Just means awake. So, the awakened way. The way of being awake. To study that way is to study yourself. One self. What does that mean, to study oneself? This means to look at yourself, to look at, and as I said, spirituality doesn't mean only certain aspects, only the good aspects. This means to look at everything, whatever arises, whatever we experience, look at it. in the middle of everything you don't like, that's the best place to pursue this way. That's where it's the hottest. That's like, it's out there at noon. That's the best place to be practicing this way. It's where you always are. You are always in the middle of your own practice. Always, no matter what you're doing. Now we can choose to put some aspects away. There's food, certain part of the food we don't like. We don't like cucumbers. We put them on the edge of the table, on the edge of the dish. The part of the cheese, we cut it off and put it on the edge. Sometimes, that part of the cheese is not good to eat. And we know that, so we put it aside. But it's not that we're rejecting it. We're just acknowledging that it's there. We know that for our health it's better not to eat it, and we don't. It's not that we are denying it. It's not like the kitten who doesn't pay any attention to her legs. It's as if she doesn't know they're there. And often we are the same way about aspects of ourselves. But we have the possibility, as I said, to do something different. So we look. We look at it all. Whatever arises, I like it, I don't like it, I just appreciate it. Not appreciate, not meaning cultivate, I like it, I will stay here and enjoy this. No, it just means not running away from it. Allow it to be what it is. If Ivan and Jop, who took in Mia, the kitten, had thought, oh no, this is to be rejected. This cat can't walk. No. No good. The cat would not be alive today. Where do we draw the line, let's say? If someone doesn't look like we want them to look, no. If a child is born and they don't conform to what we think they should be, no. I have a reaction in an argument with someone. Probably I'm coming from a position of an idea of what should be and what should not be. And I'm pushing away what I think should not be. A very telling experience is, for me, was to go to Jerusalem and stand on the Mount of Olives, which is where Christ spent his last three moments. And at that point, the story is, the guide who was giving it, was showing us around and telling us the stories, told us that this is where Christ looked down over the city of Jerusalem, the teeming city. Do you know, teeming means You know, if you look at a colony of ants, that's teeming. They're going in every direction, constantly. And he looked down on that city and wept. Realizing they did not know, as he said, they don't know what they're doing. And he had great compassion, because he knew in himself what it was to fight, to hate, to struggle, to withdraw, to grasp, and he knew what the root of that problem was, and he saw that they didn't. If they had seen the root of that problem, they would not have been crashing into each other, throwing stones, whatever they were doing. First, we see this in ourselves. First, we see that we do that in ourselves. We have an aspect of ourself that we don't like, and we do within ourselves what the Arabs and the Jews do among themselves. The first step is to look inside, to study. The way is to study oneself. The next line, he says, to study oneself is to forget oneself. Every time that he uses the verb is, we could almost just put, like in mathematics, the equal sign, right? To study oneself equals to forget oneself. Because if we truly study oneself, it dissolves. What we think of myself loses its consistency. This is where we can say that there, again, like I like to say, there's good news and there's bad news in this. The good news is you will not attain enlightenment. You will not awaken. This is also the bad news. Same thing. You will not attain enlightenment. You will not awaken. You Or we could say the good news and the bad news. You will die. Same thing, it's the good news and the bad news. The self will not awaken. The self will die. The self will dissolve. It's not, and even this is too much, because from the beginning there isn't anything to dissolve. It's just an illusion anyway, so it sounds like some extraordinary thing that will happen. We have to be an alchemist and something fabulous will happen. No. You doesn't attain anything. You cannot. There is no attainment in that sense either. And when he says forget oneself. It's the same we use forget oneself, we use to let go of oneself, we use to be free of oneself, different phrases for this. We could also say to appreciate oneself, just what it is. Ultimately, what happens, however, is that bit by bit, what we think of the self is stripped away. My ideas, my opinions, as we said the other day, these barriers that I put up to construct myself are stripped away. As I start to acknowledge aspects of myself that I think of as being dead, the legs that I think are not there, the tail that I don't see, the parts that I'm dragging around inanimately, but they're keeping me from fully moving. As I start to acknowledge that, what happens is there is a stripping away, and I become naked. There is, it's almost as if there was no skin. Even the skin is gone. Of course, we're still exactly as we are. Like I said, nothing, you don't become someone else. You become really who you are. But because you've been hiding behind all of these masks, and you've been wearing all of these costumes, you haven't been able to really be who you are and express really who you are. So you slowly have to take off the masks. And there are many of them. And take off the disguises, the costumes. In order to do that, however, we have to look at those disguises, and we have to look at the costumes and the masks, and not run from them, and acknowledge them. And in fact, the thing is that in acknowledging them, they dissolve. One of the famous stories in Zen 2 is with the one whom we call the sixth patriarch, whom I have talked about before. And at one point, after he had been recognized as being someone awakened, and he was not accepted, the community didn't accept him, and he had to flee. And some of the other members of the community came after him, because they wanted what he had. And at one point, they caught up with him, and he put down, again, the bowl and the robe, which symbolized that he had been recognized, and said, "Take it. Take it if you can, if you want it, take it." And the one who had come after him realized he couldn't. couldn't. Like, you cannot. He could not. And he said, I didn't come for that, actually. He realized at that moment, that's not what I came for. I came for the teaching. What? Teach me. Please tell me. And the one who had the bowl and the robe said, before any thoughts of good or evil, before any of these dualistic thoughts we have, good or bad, me or you, big or small, fast or slow, clear or confused, before that, what is your true face? So, before all the masks, what? Who are you? That's what this is talking about. Forgetting all of the masks, and the good and the bad, and the smart and the stupid, and the dead and the alive. Forgetting all that. That's the naked. That's the naked you. Who is that? And what is the contradiction or the paradox of this is that that is always being expressed. Even when we are putting on loads of makeup, disguising ourselves completely, hiding behind what we call a false self, engaging in pushing away things we don't like, pushing away people we don't like, hiding. Even then is being expressed this true self. That's just another expression of it. But we don't know it. We don't see it. It's like the kitten who doesn't see her legs. And therefore she doesn't take care of them. And that's the same thing we're doing. We don't see who we really are, and so we don't take care of it. And in fact, we do harm as a result. The teeming masses in Jerusalem are harming each other because they don't see their true selves. And it's the great irony is that they're fighting about a path that is supposed to lead to the true self. They're fighting about different ways of coming to the true self. I've talked about this before too. I think that a film that I saw with my son, I never would have seen it otherwise, but it was, you know, about crusades and battles and things. Kingdom of Heaven by Ridley Scott. Has anyone seen that film? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's about the crusades, right? There's the great confrontation between Christian soldiers from Europe and the Saracens, the Arabs, the infidels. And at one point in the film, the Christians are occupying a citadel, a fortress, and the horizon is filled with invading infidels, the Saracens who are arriving. And the battle ensues, and at one point the opposing forces are meeting, are confronting at the gate to the fortress. And the scene, Ridley Scott films it from above. And you see these, again, it's like the ants. These two groups, which aren't, in fact, two groups anymore, of individuals, completely intermingling and hacking away at each other. In this mass of humanity that you can't, at some point, you can't even see the difference between the individuals. It's just this struggling mass. This is our story. It's one body made up of individual parts who are struggling against one another, fighting to be on one side of the door or the other, to be inside the fortress or outside, to possess this plot of land and rock. Missing completely the point of life. Missing completely their true selves. They haven't forgotten themselves, let's say, and stay in the context of this text. Now, if then the next step is to forget oneself, is to be enlightened by the myriad dharmas, by the many things. So again, forget oneself equals enlightened by everything. This is broken down into three steps, three lines, but in fact it's like that. We could build a mathematical formula in which it was study the way equals study oneself equals forget oneself equals enlightened by the myriad dharmas. Because when we are stripped, anu, when we are naked, we have no longer an opinion or a, not necessarily an opinion, we are no longer blocked by an opinion. We no longer think, oh, there are certain things that are valuable for my practice and others that aren't. When I'm sitting on my cushion, I should be thinking of this, I shouldn't be thinking of that. Only certain aspects of my life can help me become enlightened. We think like this most of the time. But in fact, everything is material. Everything is valid. You just open your eyes, and there it is. Everything is alive. for some reason, this other story of Christ comes back. This one from the popular movie Jesus Christ Superstar, where he comes in on Palm Sunday, he comes into the city, and the guards are ready to arrest him. And the crowds are singing, Hosanna, Hosanna, Hosanna. And the children are running towards him, and it's a very sort of fabulous scene. And the guards are coming in, moving closer, and he screams out angrily to the guards, "You can arrest me. You can shut me up. But the rocks and stones will keep saying it. Everything is saying it. And everything is saying it actually better than I am saying it. Or better than Christ was saying it. Or better than the guards are saying it. And yet everything is saying it. But we can only see that, we can only appreciate that, the more we forget what we are saying, what we think we are saying. We're always saying it too, but we think that we should say it a different way, and so we start saying something, and then we become lost in saying and thinking, trying to think better, say better. But before those thoughts, as Huinang, the sixth patriarch, said, before that, before I think I should say it like this, what is it? If we can do that, forget the self, in that moment, everything is enlightening. Everything. The kitten, the fruit at breakfast, the hot sun, the different opinions about should we open the windows and not open the windows, the preference of we should have for lunch rice, no, we should have pasta. All of that is enlightening. Every aspect of me is enlightening in that, at that moment. Now, of course, when we have that moment, and everyone has it at some point, and if you think you haven't, well, I know you will. I know everyone has that potential. I have absolute faith in every one of you. We want it back as soon as it's happened. And then we start all over again. We have to start all over again. Because the wanting it back, we're already back at the beginning. There's something we want and something we don't want. So we have to start over again. Can we then, in that starting over again, appreciate the starting over again? Can we be stripped in starting over again? Can we be naked starting over again? The last line of this, which I did not read, he says, the traces of enlightenment come to an end, and this traceless enlightenment is continued endlessly. We're getting a bit ahead of ourselves, but this is just to say that it's endless. That that is awakening is to see the endlessness, to experience the endlessness. We can understand this logically. We can say, okay, it's endless. But, like, you cannot be awakened. You cannot understand endless. Because you is a finite concept. Understanding is finite. So, it can't understand endlessness, which is endless, which is not finite. We can experience endlessness. We can experience me. The endless me. We can experience that, but we can't understand it. I mean, understand conceptually with our intellect. And saying this does not mean we should not cultivate our conceptual intellectual mind. Because that conceptual intellectual mind can be of great use in expressing what cannot be intellectualized and conceptualized. You follow that?
Can you repeat this?
Yes. So, this mind that the intellect thinks clearly, sometimes doesn't. The conceptual thinking mind cannot grasp the true self, cannot grasp the endless me. It cannot, there is no concept for it. There is no intellect that can grasp it. Because it's not an intellectual thought, it's not a concept. However, it can be of great use, the conceptual thinking mind, can be of great use in helping us to express that me, endless, me, that awakening. It's a tool. On all of these cushions and things is written upaya. Upaya is a Sanskrit word for skillful means, a tool. These are tools that we use for sitting. The intellect is a fabulous upaya, a fabulous skillful means that we, if we put to use, is without measure. We don't know what its potential is. Usually we don't put it to use. We put it to use for, usually for more, instead of, we don't use it as a means to expand, we use it as a means to constrict, let's say. That's a better way to say it. So it's not about being stupid. It's not about not thinking. It's about not becoming fixated on the thoughts and the ideas and the concepts, forgetting them. And then when we have forgotten oneself equals enlightened by the myriad dharmas, as I said, everything speaks. And because we are naked, we hear all of those voices. We feel it all. We see the kitten. We see all the cats. They're all different. The dogs too. They're all different. And yet, what do we see? We see what we share, what we have in common. My own teacher taught us from the very beginning that the way of awakening, was not by withdrawing from the world. That it was by engaging fully in the world and in everyday life. And the way that she taught us this was by using our lives.
Our
own lives. We arrived, and as we were was perfect. Meaning, we didn't have to leave our families, we didn't have to leave our jobs, which traditionally is what in the Zen path had been the way. Of course, anyone could practice it, but generally there were monasteries or temples in which monks lived. And outside people could come, like people go to the church on Sunday. But for people who seriously wanted to awaken, to realize themselves, they had to leave their usual lives, their worldly ways, and enter the monastery. My own teacher did that. She had no children, but she left her career in the art world in Paris and went to live with her teacher in a monastery in America. Through her practice, through having gone through that experience, she realized that the same thing, that the key was not about taking a specific vow to give up an apartment, a life, a career, and go live exclusively with other people who did that, but was the only thing that needed to be forgotten was this attachment to me, this false me. And that the way of doing that was not by withdrawing, but by fully engaging. Studying the self meant plunging into it, going into the heart of it. Now, I don't know. Maybe it's harder that way. Maybe it's easier when you say, I'm leaving it all behind and I'm going to live in a monastery and I don't have to think about it. Because I didn't do that, I don't know. The truth is, however, that whatever is keeping you from realizing yourself, you will take with you into the monastery. It's not the car that's keeping you from realizing yourself. It's your attachment to the car. But the attachment to the car is just another version of the attachment to yourself. So, I say that about my teacher only because it's a very concrete example. I had two children, and I still have two children. I have to work for a living. And I have a husband. It's in the middle of all of that that we realize who we are. It's not pulling out somewhere else. And then we see that everything becomes upaya. Come back to this word of upaya, a skillful means. Everything becomes a tool to realize who we are, to realize the nature of myself and all others. All of the stories that you're involved with sitting there on your cushion, because we're all involved with, I should have done this, he said that, she did that, oh, I don't like that, next week I'll do this, I'll plan how I'll rearrange my room, I will buy this, when I was young this happened, I always do the same thing. All of these stories that we're telling, you don't need to throw them away. Use them. Look at them. What do they have to tell you? It's like the compost heap. All of the scraps, the cucumbers we didn't want, and the edge of the cheese, we put it into the compost. It's valuable. It has use. What are those stories? What's happening there? Who is in the middle of those stories? Who is hiding behind those stories? What is not being acknowledged by chewing the same story all the time? And we have the possibility. I don't know if me or the kitten will have that possibility, but we have the possibility to wake up those parts of ourselves that we're dragging around. We have the possibility to become whole. We are whole already, but we don't see it. But we have that potential. Every single one of us. Like the Dalai Lama said, even Mao Zedong, even Mao, who did horrible things to Tibet, and it's right in the middle of it all that you have to look. And that's why this is such a perfect opportunity to sit. And just sit in the middle of it. You could go sit in the middle of the highway, but it would be more difficult. You could go sit, in the airport, or in the center of Lisbon, but it would be more difficult. There would be a lot more that you would have to strip away. Whereas here, there isn't much. We've taken most of it away. You don't have a lot of food. You don't have the kinds of food that you want. you don't have a lot of sleep, you don't have a lot of coffee, you don't have a lot of sugar, the stuff that we usually use to make things complicated. And so we just sit here. And we can ask ourselves that question from the sixth patriarch. Before any thought of good and evil, what is your true face? That's not just some story that is told. That is your story right now. And in that story, the monk as they say in these stories, had a great awakening with that question. And said to the sixth patriarch, oh, all of the years that I was with the other teacher, and this never happened to me. You are my true teacher, or please be my teacher, or something. And the sixth patriarch said, no, we have the same teacher. And he sent him back to the monastery. And he went off, the sixth patriarch, and disappeared for 20 years. Because he too had things he still needed to realize. He knew it was endless. And that it was not him. He was, as I said the other day, an ambassador. He was a spokesperson. The words came through him, but it wasn't him. The monk had his own experience. It wasn't about him, it was about the monk. So, that is the story of this way, that is the story of Mia the kitten. This is the story of, yes, the great heart. That is the essence of this practice, in fact. We can open it to questions or comments. All of the words are clear? Do they need translating or? I can't translate them into Portuguese. But that is a way of opening your heart, is translating into a language you don't know, as I've said before. And that's what study oneself equals forget oneself, is to translate yourself into a language you don't know. Which means you have to forget the language you do know about yourself. And then you end up speaking the language that everyone speaks. No one's speaking.